According to the Government Accountability Office, the April cancellation of the BioWatch 3 program was the natural result of DHS eventually following its own acquisition policies. And if it had done so from the start of the program in 2008, things likely would have been very different. Among the problems, DHS never conducted a complete analysis of alternatives before settling on the technology it wanted to use. As a result, the program's estimated cost ballooned from $2.1 billion to $5.8 billion, and by 2014, the technology still was not mature enough to deploy. To date, DHS says it's only spent $61 million on BioWatch 3, and it's now moving quickly to come up with a new acquisition plan. But since it's now decided the technology it's spent the past 6 years building is unworkable, the immediate future of the department's bioweapons detection program is surrounded by uncertainty, according to Chris Curry, the acting director for Homeland Security and Justice Issues at GAO.
For years, the focus has been on developing the Gen 3 system. Now that there is no Gen 3 to replace it, there are new questions about the performance and maintainability of the current system that need to be answered. For example, DHS officials told us that some Gen 2 equipment is nearing the end of its useful life and will need to be replaced as early as next year. But it's not yet clear how the current system will be replaced or upgraded. Also, while Gen 2 has been used in the field for more than a decade now, information about its technical capabilities, including the limits of detection, is actually pretty limited. For example, in 2011, the National Academy of Sciences reported that rapid initial deployment of BioWatch did not allow for sufficient testing and evaluation.
The aging BioWatch equipment was deployed to 30 cities in the wake of the 2001 anthrax attacks, and it's only capable of detecting five different biological agents. Besides that, the time between when a biological agent is caught in one of the current system's filters and when it's verified as a bioweapon back at an official laboratory can range between 12 and 36 hours. That is still a vast improvement over government capabilities to respond to biological threats before 9/11, because officials didn't know there was an attack underway until people began to exhibit symptoms, and that often took several days after they were exposed to the weapon. The new version of BioWatch was supposed to cut the detection time to just a few hours, and according to an analysis of alternatives, DHS eventually hired the Institute for Defense Analyses to conduct in 2012. The technology the department was pursuing was, in fact, faster, because the equipment analyzed pathogen samples on the spot without requiring that samples be driven to an off-site lab. But, according to Dr. Dina Disraeli, who led the IDA study, the new detectors are even worse than the current system when it comes to identifying a broad variety of bioweapons.
Autonomous identification has a slightly higher life cycle cost estimate than environmental collection. Additionally, while it achieves the fastest detections, when it detects, it only detects, on average, approximately half the number of attacks detected by environmental collection, resulting in increased numbers of casualties due to large numbers of missed attacks. HSPD-10 is still in effect, and as such, the imperative remains for an early warning and detection system to identify biological events and trigger a response to mitigate their consequences.
When DHS Secretary Jay Johnson put BioWatch 3 on the chopping block back in April, he also ordered officials to draft reports on lessons learned from the program's failure and the way ahead within 2 weeks. Those reports still have not been sent to Congress, but officials told the House Homeland Security Committee on Tuesday that they are down on paper now and in the middle of the agency's internal review process. BioWatch 3 was an internal development effort within DHS's Science and Technology Directorate, and according to GAO, the problems that led to its demise can be traced back to a complete absence of unified R&D policy across the department. Again, Chris Curry.
In 2012, we reported that DHS had no policies for coordinating or really managing its R&D investments, not just within S&T, but across all the components. And I liken the R&D situation at DHS to what the acquisition situation was at DHS probably 8 or 10 years ago, when there were no acquisition policies, and the department had taken many steps to outline that they have new policies and practices for following those. In R&D, they've gotten a little bit of a late start on that. And it's very similar. So let me give you an example of that. For example, a couple of years ago, DHS had no definition for what R&D at the department was. Other agencies like DOD or NASA use technology readiness levels and other things to define R&D. DHS did not have a common definition. So we think it's very important, and what we recommended is that they develop these policies for what R&D is going to look like through the life cycle. what S&T is going to do, but more importantly, what's going to happen when they transfer it to the components, and when is that going to happen?
The last time GAO examined the subject in 2012, it had never happened. No project had ever successfully made its way from the S&T directorate within DHS into operational use by one of the department's operational components. DHS officials claim they've turned a corner on the management of research and development funding. Since the 2012 report, the department has adopted definitions and management guidelines that closely match the ones the Defense Department uses. Perhaps not coincidentally, Dr. Reginald Brothers, who took over as the DHS Undersecretary for Science and Technology in April, is a transplant from DOD, where he worked as the Deputy Assistant Secretary for Research.
In my time at S&T, I've seen a very functional, a very positive working relationship. We're unified in pursuit of the shared goal of development and implementation of an effective and efficient national biosurveillance framework. That's encouraging to me. The cancellation of the BioWatch Gen 3 acquisition gives us at DHS an opportunity to jointly evaluate the current operational BioWatch program and develop a systems approach to next-generation biodetection. Numerous lessons learned by S&T, OHA, and Management Directorate are already guiding our unified path forward. For that reason, I'm confident that we won't repeat past mistakes. Moving forward, S&T and OHA will evaluate the full range of near and far and long-term investments in new or updated capabilities. This includes potential for short-term incremental improvements to the existing BioWatch system. This also includes longer-term shifts toward a distributed, networked, sensor-agnostic architecture with potential capability well beyond what the department initially envisioned with the Gen 3 acquisition.
In Washington, Jared Serbu, FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM.